This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
They need to feel what winning is like, and I think Ben's going to be very aggressive year one as a head coach. Nice throw for Alexander. Did he get his feet down? He did. Touchdown, Chicago. What a touch throw.
That was Adam Amin, Jim Miller, and Stacey Dales on the Fox broadcast yesterday. This is Raheem Ann Harris on 670 The Score, and we go to our Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today, and that is where we find the former Bears quarterback, Fox 32 NFL analyst, and Sirius XM NFL radio host, Jim Miller. Jim, how are you?
Good. Good to be with you this morning.
Good morning, Jim. Question, do you think you actually beat the team back to the state of Michigan?
Oh, I know I did. Miami had a lot of things to figure out, I think. It was a good trip.
Well, okay, so that's good to know, because I know that was part of the discussion on the broadcast, was who was going to get back faster. Our friend on the morning show, Ruthie Polinsky, mentioned the police escort and a bus. But how were you able to get it done there?
I've made this trip so many times. I know all the back roads to hit, and I know they took a lot of time after the game regrouping. You know, obviously you got to break everything down and get all the buses loaded. So I was out of that booth right after the game was over while they were getting cleaned up.
Now that is a veteran move. I think I really enjoyed the broadcast with you guys yesterday, and it's really great to have you on today, because you even brought him up during the broadcast that was happening at Soldier Field. Having played for John Shoup, knowing that is the archetype for the Ben Johnson offense, how did you see that come into fruition yesterday, even with Tyson Bagent and Case Keenum at the helm?
Yeah, I just know, and Ben and I have had discussions about John. You know, John was a very detailed coach. He was very meticulous in how he prepared you. You know, he obviously was our quarterback's coach and then got elevated to OC. But, you know, every Monday or Tuesday when I'd be in the building before we'd start to install the game plans, he'd have every protection written up on the board, what you need to look for as a quarterback. The check with me plays were very detailed and what you were going to audible to. And I think that's really, you know, made an impact on Ben. You know, John has been a mentor to Ben when he got into coaching. And I think that attention to detail is pretty evident. And I think the intensity. People didn't know about John Shoup. John Shoup was a very intense coach. He would challenge you as a player. He would get frustrated when things weren't executed the way he wanted them executed. But it's, you know, it's good to strive for perfection. You're rarely going to get it, but he was constantly striving for perfection, and I think Ben has that trait, and I think it's a very good trait to have.
Jim Miller joining us here on Raheem Ann Harris, former Bears quarterback and the Fox 32 NFL analyst. You heard him on the game if you were watching yesterday. Jim, okay, Caleb Williams, he did not play yesterday. We don't know how much or if he's going to play in the preseason. How much should Caleb Williams play, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think he needs to play. I think, you know, the only time you get better at playing football is you got to go out and really participate in what you're going to be asked to do. You know, Patrick Mahomes has won a lot of Super Bowls. He plays in the preseason. So I don't see any reason why Caleb Williams shouldn't have to.
Jim, I also want to ask you about when we talk about what happened before the game with Caleb Williams. How much are you taking that into consideration? I know the broadcast discussed it a little bit, just him being out there working out before the game. You know, how do you see that being visualized? What do you think occurred there as far as maybe what he was able to do with the other starters who didn't play?
Yeah, their game was really the scrimmage against Miami during the week. So they got a lot of that work done, and Coach Johnson wanted to carry that over to the day of the game and kind of grill him through things. And I thought that was good. You know, we showed it on the broadcast, him talking to Caleb. They're talking through the plays. He's calling them out. And, you know, I think that's where a play caller is really, you know, really communicating to their quarterback, hey, this is what I expect here. You know, let's go against this coverage. And they're kind of talking things through of how he wants it executed, the look that he's going to see. You know, is he executing it properly? Are you seeing it the same way I'm seeing it? And this is why I want it executed this way. He's giving them the reasons why, and they're talking through everything. And I think that's very beneficial, because I think as a quarterback, you're an extension of the coach on the field. You got to have the same vision of what you expect and how a game is going to unfold. And I think all those things are positive. There were a lot of steps missed last year in Caleb's development. Even Ryan Poles has admitted steps were missed. And I think Ben Johnson's attention to detail is making sure that that's not going to happen again. He said it was going to start from ground zero, and I think it has, because Caleb needs that. He really does.
We have a couple of players that are not starting from ground zero, but one that is at the left tackle position. What you saw yesterday between Braxton Jones and obviously Ozzie Tripillo, who was drafted in the second round, what did you make of those two players in their first preseason action, and who do you think is in the driver's seat for that job?
Well, unless I think Braxton, really gets stronger in the next few weeks, I think by default the position's going to go to Ozzie Tripillo. Amagaji's been out with an injury. Braxton, is coming back from injury. It's his injury. He doesn't have his sea legs under him yet. He's got to get stronger. He's not as strong as what he needs to be, with his legs, with the injury he sustained. And that's going to come over time, and I just don't think he's ready for that yet. Now, maybe he makes a miraculous recovery where he does get that, but I just think by default it could go to Ozzie Tripillo, and it may go to Ozzie Tripillo just because those other guys aren't at full strength yet, personally.
Yeah, and I think, Jim, one of the concerns about Braxton Jones already is that, he doesn't play with a very wide leg base. And I wonder how much that did hurt him even yesterday, when you can be practice ready, but game ready, as we see, even compared to joint practices, is a different thing.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think he's been a serviceable player. I don't think he's a dominator. I think he's a player that's getting better, that continues to work. And unfortunately, this injury happened. Amagaji has all the measurables you want. I mean, he is a prototypical left tackle that has the wingspan, he has the length, but his technique and all those things are missing. It's unfortunate that he was not able to go down and play in the Senior Bowl due to his quad injury when he was coming out of college, because I think that would have opened up his eyes to a lot of things. And he was just, his growth was stunted. He didn't practice a lot last year. He's thrown into the fire. He gets in six games, and it did not go well. And a lot of it is just technique. Now, as for Ozzie Tripillo, he's played both right and left tackle. I think he's a very underrated player. I think he's a very smart player. I think he's a technician. And I think what would benefit him is having a four-time All-Pro and Joe Tooney helping him out at left guard. But I do think he is serviceable, and I think he's a really good player. I talked to Bill O'Brien, the head coach of Boston College. He thinks the world of Ozzie, because he's just just kind of a tough grinder, and he's a football player. And right now that will suffice, I think, for the Bears.
Former Bears quarterback Jim Miller was in the booth for the Bears 24-24 tie against the Dolphins. He joins us now on Raheem and Harris. I want to talk about your overall kind of observations. Who really popped to you outside of obviously the left tackle position on offense for the Bears yesterday?
Well, certainly defensively. Obviously, Booker. People forget Booker is only 22 years old. He probably should have stayed in college. And I brought that up on the air because he's just so young. His body has not filled out yet. And I compared him to a poor Mad Max Crosby, because you see the motor, you see the effort. And, he lit it up last preseason because he does have a quick twitch and a burst to get to the ball. But his body, maturity-wise, has just got to get caught up. He's still got to add more weight. He's still got to get stronger. That way powerful tackles won't overpower him, moving forward. And that's just time. That's his body settling in. Typically, I just know for me in the NFL, it took till I was 24, 25, where, all right, I feel good about my strength. I feel good about my weight. I feel good about where I'm at. And he's still growing. you know, and he's got to get a lot stronger. So certainly he flashed. I think you see Noah Sewell. He's a guy that, you know, he'll be a good guy off the bench. He certainly isn't going to take over the starters, but I thought he took a step forward. He's been a little banged up the past couple years, and he'd probably be first off the bench if something happened. I think he's ahead of Hippolyte. I do like the secondary of the Bears. You know, Terrell Smith's got to catch that pick six. That can't happen. He had his hands in the wrong position. But I do think those long corners really suit what Dennis Allen is going to do defensively. They've got the long arms to really jam receivers at the line of scrimmage and disrupt the timing of routes, and that's the type of play that they want. But I would think, you know, the Bears need another edge rusher to step up. You know, I do like the interior guys. They probably can kick Dio down in pass situations to get maybe a NASCAR package on the field. But, you know, that's going to have to define itself, because if they can't do it with the guys that are there, they're going to have to blitz more. And they do have guys, and we saw blitzes yesterday where they were able to hit home, where Dennis Allen can manufacture it. But, you know, that's going to be a big question mark. Can that pass rush really come through?
Our segment with Jim Miller is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. Jim, as a former quarterback, what did you think of the two-minute drill opportunities that the Bears had in both ending the first half and then what we saw in the second half? I want to start with that first one, because it's been a while since we've seen something like that and have an opportunity and they go downfield the way they did.
Yeah, I really like, you know, you just look at Tyson Bagent. He runs the operation. You know, that's how an offense should look. I know they came out a couple of three and outs, but once they settled in, and like in that key situation, he's, you know, he's calm. He runs the operation the way you want it to be run, and you could see it in camp. You know, it's not a fire drill out there. He's in charge. He's in command. He makes the right reads. He's a very heady player. And the word's out. He's going to be a fine quarterback, in my opinion. 2 years ago, he was 2-2 as a starter that we brought up, and the sack totals were down when he was inserted into the lineup. I think Justin Field was sacked one at every eight plays, and Tyson Bagent, as soon as he got inserted, it was one every 21 plays. How does that happen? It happens because he can process information. He's able, you know, like the coach said, he's serious about it. He attacks it. He prepares himself, and he wants to know things inside and out. And that's what you have to do as a quarterback. You got to put in the work to prepare for what you're going to see. And I think we have seen that every time he's been out there. He's still young. He's still growing. But I like him as a young quarterback, and I surely think the Bears feel real good about where he's at.
Jim, do you feel like he's got that number two spot locked down, or can Case Keenum move up, in your opinion?
Well, I think, you know, that it could determine itself. You know, let's say late in the year, if the Bears are fighting for a playoff spot, would they want more experience of a guy who's been there? Maybe that could factor in, where maybe Case is placed at the two, you know, but I don't think so. I think the kid is earning the trust of his coach, and I think he's earned the trust of his teammates, where he's going to earn that job, and I think he'll probably keep it, you know, the entire season, because he's put in the work and he's earned it.
We're talking to Jim Miller, the former Bears quarterback. He was in the booth for yesterday's game against the Dolphins. Jim, I also want to ask you about the structure of the offense and what we saw yesterday. Not as much pre-snap motion as maybe a lot of people thought, but a heavy diet of play action. What did you think about just the scheme?
Yeah, I like the under the center stuff. I do think Ben is going to utilize all personnel groupings. They've got great tight ends to go 12 personnel. They've got three wides. They can go empty. There's not really a personnel grouping the Bears can't present. But I do think you do get a better look when you're underneath center for the play action, as much as they want to run the football. You know, again, it was brought up on the broadcast. The Lions have rushed for 56 touchdowns the past 2 years. That's more than any team in the league. And so certainly your run game's going to go hand-in-hand with your play action, where everything looks the same. You kind of get the defense to bite on it. It creates a conflict of interest, and you can make a lot of hay, and you can get a lot of explosive plays. And I do think, you know, that's been a what I want to say, a focus of Ben Johnson to get Caleb under the center more. He's ran a lot of shotgun at USC, obviously under Lincoln Riley. He ran a lot of shotgun his first year because that's what he's comfortable in. But I think Coach said you got to get outside your comfort zone. We're going to ask you to do different things, and that's part of playing quarterback too, is you got to get under center and be able to do it all. And I think Caleb will be able to do it all.
Jim, running the football has been so key for Ben Johnson's offense and his play calling. I'm just curious as to what you saw from Kyle Manungai and how that might affect your opinion on where he falls into the depth chart and if they need to add another running back to that room based on what you saw.
Well, you like to think Roshan is going to get healthy. You know, he's probably going to be their short yardage goal line back like what he's been. You know, last year he did score 6 touchdowns. But Manungai is another guy. I think he's quickly earning the trust of the coaches because anytime he's thrown in there, he knows his assignment. He knows what to do. It's not too big for him, and his teammates see it. And he's kind of earning a spot here. I think Swift is the starter, and if something were to happen, I think that's up to Manungai if the coaches would trust him to put him in there. Bottom line is he's a special teams demon. A lot of teams focused on their special teams this year via the draft. Later draft picks like Hippolyte, like Manungai, and for other teams around the league, they're going to play. Those guys are going to be part of the core special team. So that alone is going to get him a good shot to make the roster, in my opinion, because he will excel as as a four core special teamer if that's what the Bears choose to use him as. And again, he's got to earn that.
Jim, I also want to ask you about what George McCaskey said to you guys in the booth when it was you, Adam, and Stacy talking about Jay Hilgenberg and who he wanted to get in next into the Hall of Fame. What were your thoughts and your takeaways on what he had to say?
Well, I don't disagree with George, but the problem is he's right. There's a logjam. You know, you look at, you know, who was it? Rich McKay, the president of Atlanta. He's been screaming about Tommy Nobis, the linebacker. And he's probably right. Tommy Nobis has been a long time coming. He needs to get into the Hall of Fame. And great players like Jay Hilgenberg and the Bears do have the most of any team in the National Football League that represent the Hall of Fame. And that's a good thing. And there should be more to come. But it kind of, you know, when I talk to the other voters, we feel like we're putting in all these Bears. And I said, well, it doesn't mean it's the wrong thing if it's the right vote to do it. You know, I've been politicking for Devin Hester, and I personally think a teammate of mine, Olin Krutz, deserves a chance to be in the Hall of Fame. I play with a lot of good centers, and he's one of them. So there's more to come. But, you know, it becomes a political football. You know, you get in those meeting rooms and those Hall of Fame representatives, hey, if you vote my guy in, I'll vote your guy in, and it becomes that type of game, and it's unfortunate. And sometimes I wish the Hall of Fame would do like what they did a couple years ago and really open it up to where 20 guys get elected, because there's some guys that have been sorely missed and overlooked, and, you know, but it, again, there's a lot of consternation, a lot of back and forth, and according to the president at that time, Dave Baker, they were never going to do that again. But I would think 5 years, every 5 or 10 years, to me, they need to have a correction where they open it up and maybe they do have a class of 20 to get voted in to get caught up on the logjam that George McCaskey was alluding to.
I agree. I think celebrating football players who deserve it is the right thing to do. And I appreciate your thoughts on it, Jim.
Yep, you bet. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
That was Jim Miller, former Bears quarterback, part of the booth with Adam Amin and Stacy Dales yesterday on Fox 32, covering a lot of ground and played for John Shoup, which I think is huge because if you don't know, that is where Ben Johnson got the inspiration, or at least he considers one of the archetypes for his offense. We have more coming up here on Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score. Cubs, what was that? What are we doing? Can we discuss it?
We could talk about it, but I don't think you're going to be happy with the conversation.
No, nobody is, but we got to do it. It's next on The Score.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
He's running. The pitch outside. The throw to second base. He's out at second base.
I'm going to review this. Counts, I don't even think, look back.
Here it comes. And the 1-1. Bouncing ball to second base. The ball game is over. Sedesi grabbed the ball, ran over, stepped on second. And the Cardinals have beaten the Cubs by a score of 3-2.
Oh, man. I don't even know where to begin. Here I was asking for a sweep last week, and that is not only not what happened, but I'm having to say things like, well, you were able to salvage the series with the Reds. You were able to salvage the series with the Cardinals. They played last night on Sunday Night Baseball. Pat and Rod, of course, had the local call here on The Score. This is Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score. It makes it so much worse that you know what the Brewers are doing, knowing how the Cubs treated this season. And the blockbuster trade that you made is stuck right now at 18 home runs on the year. Michael Busch has 22. You lose 3-2 to the Cardinals in a game that Shota Imanaga, your stopper, started. And he makes one mistake and then he's in the game for a batter too long. And your offense can't overcome it.
Here's the problem with the Cubs right now. Their margin for error has become razor thin to win ball games, and that's unacceptable. You should be able to make a mistake and overcome it against a team that's not great. Look, I get it. The Brewers are the Brewers right now. They're the best team in Major League Baseball. But it's not just that. It's that you've been middling around 500 now for a month and a half, almost.
2 months. June was 500. They were four games above 500 in July for that month.
Yeah, yeah. And no one is out here pulling away except for one team, but that team happens to play in your division. And so while you look at the standings, like the overall standings in Major League Baseball, and understand that there's only one team that's more than a game ahead of you in the standings in Major League Baseball, but that team plays in your division, and you haven't looked competent enough on offense, consistent enough on offense. You're not scoring enough runs game to game. And what's crazy is, if you go back to the beginning of the season, Layla, the way they were winning games, remember when it was weather adverse, when it was conditions adverse at Wrigley Field, and they were finding other ways to score runs besides slugging the ball out of the yard? I haven't seen that team now in a few weeks that's capable of getting the job done by scoring runs without using doubles and triples and home runs.
When you don't have power, that's it. You're not going to be able to do a lot. And you traded for a guy who brought power until that power adage came to a halt at the beginning of last year or last month. We've talked a lot about whether or not we think Kyle Tucker was injured. I tend to think that if that were really the case, and we've talked a lot about his jammed finger, that he probably wouldn't have played in the All-Star game, or else it really doesn't make sense. But the numbers were not just bad for the Cubs. Yeah, not discrediting what happened, by the way. Saturday was great, but the problem is, how much are you going to hang your hat on the 9-1 win instead of critically looking at the 5-0 loss on Friday and the 3-2 loss last night? That's where I have an issue. Yes, you provide power in one game, and your batters were able to come through. But for example, if you told me at the beginning of this season that Michael Busch would have more home runs right now than Kyle Tucker, and that the numbers would be 22 and 18 respectively, that would give me reason to be concerned. And yes, everything looks worse when you've got the team up north breathing down your necks. The Brewers are now 23 and 4 since they added Andrew Vaughn to the roster. If you had taken bets on who was going to make the biggest difference in the division, I would have said it was Kyle Tucker, not Andrew Vaughn. Vaughn is slashing 342, 412, 629, 1,041 with 7 homers and 28 RBI. That is outrageous.
It is outrageous. The Cubs were leading for basically most of the season the major leagues in run differential. They're second now to the Brewers, of course, but they're still second at plus 117 while the Brewers are plus 132. But it's the fact that the Brewers have not only won 24 of their last 28 games, but there's an 11-game winning streak in there. There's a current 9-game winning streak, which they're going to try to add to against the Pittsburgh Pirates now. That seems like a series they could probably win. Although Paul Skenes pitches tomorrow. There's that. It's just a combination of realizing that the team that you're going up against to win your division and possibly get a top two seed in the National League and a bye out of the wild card is in your division. There seems to be no stopping them. But if you look at what the Cubs have wrong, I go back to the trade deadline, Layla. I don't know that Eugenio Suarez would correct the problems I'm seeing. He would help, but I don't know that he would help enough to make that big of a difference to what the Cubs need to be able to beat the Brewers in the National League Central.
Oh, no, absolutely he would. He would have helped. Yes, absolutely.
Yes, he would have helped, but I don't think he would have been enough to stop them. The Brewers are 29 games over 500.
Over 500 doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is when you're talking about the individuals making the differences for their respective teams. When you make a trade for a guy like Kyle Tucker, he's not performing to what the expectation was. We know that. We're trying to figure out why. But what also isn't great is when the entire offense seems to collapse around him. That's what you don't want happening. And then when guys are getting on base, we're having some real issues when it comes to what's happening in that respect. You know, you're getting caught stealing. John Birdie's hand, he comes in as a pinch runner, by the way. That's what was also a bit frustrating about the situation. He comes in as a pinch runner, which means that's the specialty right there. And his hand floats off the bag for a second. It shouldn't come down to these things. It shouldn't come down to Shota Imanaga, who I think had a great outing overall. It shouldn't come down to what happened with your pinch runner at second base because it's such a tight margin. This is happening because your offense isn't working. And here we are talking about key situations in games. Well, what about the fact that Pete Armstrong gets pinch hit for and Justin Turner comes up? We're not even talking about Willie Castro in this, by the way.
To be fair, Willie Castro hadn't got a hit in his last four games.
But that's your trade deadline acquisition, and he was hitting. He was also giving everybody days off, which I appreciate. But at the same time, why is it a multi-system failure and not just individual concerns?
I think my initial statement about Suarez and acquiring him, who's the hottest hitter on the Cubs right now?
Matt Shaw.
Yeah, so Suarez is going to displace him, and you need the guys in your outfield to do something, anything. Okay, Kyle Tucker, you had a hit in each of those games. They were all singles. That's not going to move the needle, as it were. You look at what's going on with Ian Happ in left field. Obviously, Pete Crow Armstrong, you got a hit last night, got a stolen base, then promptly got picked off. It shouldn't come down to just one play for these guys, and that's what we're seeing in a lot of these games. And what's scary about it is, like, yesterday's game specifically, it gave me very much foreshadowing to the playoffs, because that's what a playoff game could look like. Your guy goes out there, he does a good job, gives up a two-run homer, he also gives up another run, and then the game's over, you lose 3-2, you're down 1-0 in a series.
Also, do I think that Eugenio's, what, 34 at-bat? Picture is who he is? No. Just like I don't think that's the way it is for Kyle Tucker. But the difference is on teams that have more robust lineups, that person isn't going to then make everything else seem to not work.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Mariners have Josh Naylor, Julio Rodriguez, obviously Cal Raleigh. Like, I get it.
But do I think his bat would have helped this club's lineup? Yes.
So he's playing for Matt Shaw, but that's just one guy. And Suarez, is he making Kyle Tucker hit for more power? Is Seiya Suzuki all of a sudden hitting home runs again? Is Pete Crow Armstrong more consistent in his approach at the plate? That's why I think there's a bigger issue right now with the Cubs lineup.
Additionally, since they lost the division lead on July 20th, the Cubs have lost four out of their last six series. Series. That's when you know there's a problem.
There's been a problem. they didn't do enough at the deadline to fix the problem. But again, they were limited in what they could go get offensively because who are you displacing? Who are you benching, I guess, is the question I'm asking.
Yeah, that's the question. You know, and you know what's funny is additionally, like, for example, I'm thinking about what happens if somebody is injured, right? Because we know what they did as far as starting pitching was concerned. That was the biggest one. Like, a lot of teams use the trade deadline to fill in the injury gaps that they have. If somebody goes down, they get another guy.
Carlos.
If you're the Houston Astros and your all-star third baseman in Isaac Paredes goes down, then you trade for another one. You get your old third baseman back who was your shortstop previously in Carlos Correa. That we've seen it happen with being able to fortify starting rotations. There were other players available. We've talked about that. Guys like Zach Littell, for example. And unfortunately, we have to wait and see what's going on with the reevaluation period of Soroka. You know, that was 7 to 10 days before he would be reevaluated. Based on what Jed Hoyer said, it doesn't sound like it's happening anytime soon. Miguel Amaya and Javier Assad can't get here fast enough.
Well, Amaya could join them in Toronto. That's good news.
That is excellent news. And I think we're all awaiting that now with more bated breath than what we had even previously.
And I think the bigger issue is right now, as we talk about the Cubs and who have a day off, maybe they really need a day off here on Raheem and Harris before playing three games in Toronto at the Blue Jays, another playoff team, a team that's better than the St. Louis Cardinals, frankly. And so understanding that, how you're going to get things together, I guess, is the biggest question that you have right now. My thing is this, with Kyle Tucker specifically, I know he had hits in each of the last three games, but if he's really hurt, at what point do you take a look and say, hey, we need you back with the ability to hit for power? And if that means going to the injured list, so be it.
I feel like that time passed. You know, we've talked about this too, is how do you evaluate that knowing that there were breaks? And even for example, he didn't take a break when the All-Star game happened. So I have to go off of this and what we know, that either he really, really, really wants to play and he's not necessarily being straightforward about how he feels like he needs to manage that. Maybe it's a situation like Dansby Swanson where you knew something was off last year and then you later find out that he needed surgery.
Can't do that when you only got 1 year of a guy in Kyle Tucker. I'll say that.
I mean, and that's the hard part. And, you know, even Justin Steele, that was a discussion. That was a decision that had to be made when it came to his surgery as well. And that was a recurring problem for him. This is a little bit different. We want you to listen for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Cubs take on Atlanta at Wrigley Field on Monday, September 1st. It is powered by Bosch Power Tools. The more you Bosch, the more you feel like a Bosch. There were a couple of big takeaways as well when it came to some details that I think deserve some time from last night's Cubs game. So we'll do that next. You're listening to Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score and the Odyssey and iHeart radio apps.
Layla Raheem, Marshall Harris, Raheem and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Right down the middle, strike three called. No argument from Contreras. Swing and a miss. And Mason Wynn is out number two.
Sochacy swings and misses strike three as Imanaga gets him with a fastball at the bottom of the zone. Two away.
It's four base runners and no walks, nine punchouts. It's a really good performance.
Yeah, Craig Counsell told you what time it was. This is Raheem and Harris talking Cubs on 670 The Score. That was our man, Pat Hughes, Zach Zaidman, Ron Coomer on the call in St. Louis. And we're trying to gather ourselves after they drop 2-3 to St. Louis.
I don't think we're trying to gather ourselves. I think we're... Here's the question you have to ask yourself.
Well, how would you put it?
Well, it's a very simple question. What's more likely? The Cubs overcoming their six-game deficit to the Brewers or the Reds overcoming their six-game deficit to the Cubs?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely column B.
They're just as close to being out of the wild card as they are to being to first place.
We have to adjust our goals. I don't want to do it yet. So the ESPN broadcast, it was Sunday Night Baseball last night. We waited 51 minutes to see that.
That extra 51 minutes was brutal.
Firepower. At least Jesse Rogers got some nice credit. I like to see Jesse on the big
stage.
Jesse
was doing his thing with Kevin Connors on the pregame, if you will, Sunday Night Baseball.
We're friends here on the Midday Show. So shout out to Jesse Rogers. The ESPN broadcast did discuss the dip in Kyle Tucker's bat speed. I think it's worth a listen.
Who knows, but this is a real number. 70.3 miles per hour bat speed in August. That's down 1.6 from July. It's down more than 2 miles per hour from June.
And that may not seem like a big number, but that's a massive number in season, right? To give you a quick piece of context, if you hit the ball, a hard hit ball in the air, every mile an hour of bat speed gets you about 5 feet of distance. So if you're down 2 miles an hour, now you're losing 10 feet of distance, that turns home runs into fly ball outs.
That is how you commentate. That conversion. Because what are we doing when we hear that? We are visualizing how we are to this point.
The math, not math thing for Kyle Tucker of late. That's what I got out of that, Layla. And so to understand that and understand where Kyle Tucker is, that's why I'm like, is he hurt? Like, let me know now.
Something isn't right.
And so here's why, if you're the Cubs, you're thinking, oh, he's not actually hurt. Because as I said, he's had a hit in each of his last three games. They've all been singles, though.
Not even in the 9-1 ball game. You know, that I think Cubs front office members like to use as a big data point. They like the blowout numbers, and I understand it. But I like to dig a little deeper on things like that. And that's why you're looking into it and you're like, well, wait a second. Not even in this game did we see favorable outcomes. He hasn't had an extra base hit all month yet. It's August 11th. Now, granted, as we've mentioned, this isn't just a Kyle Tucker issue. But that's it. You talk about the good parts when it's protection in the lineup, helping out guys like Seiya Suzuki, which I think is important. But the flip side is not ideal either. They also talked about just the lack of production of the Cubs offense. This is Craig Counsell after the game. And I know we played a little bit of it earlier, but he's the best when it comes to trying to summarize it in a way where he's seeing what we all are.
You know, we didn't create, you know, enough scoring opportunities tonight. And then, so, you know, we had two chances essentially to get the big hit and didn't happen.
Two chances.
You need more than two.
When we're talking about guys like Pedro Pajes making the difference, you know, and the Cardinals get to use this as a feather in their cap as they try to build for the future. And that kid umpire gets justified.
That kid got a lot of run over 3 days on three different broadcasts.
Here's my issue. I understand you got a bit. You want to go to the game and do your thing. But it's the expectation of the attention.
You think he was expecting all the attention that he got?
How would you describe where he was in the crowd and the stands relative to the cameras and how much FaceTime he thought he was going to get and the pose and standing in the middle of the seats like that?
I guess we just live in that kind of society, right? Where if you dress up and come up with something semi-clever, you're going to get a little bit of attention. And he got attention day one. And so he thought, I'm going to go ahead and run it back. He got more attention day two. Because remember, it was three different broadcasts.
As a child, I don't think I was definitely of the most rational thought process a lot. Typically, that's where your parents step in.
I was about to say, he has parents. Somebody had to buy that ticket. It wasn't him.
Twitch mob is cracking me up here.
What they got?
Can I have a bold take
kids
about Bradley? Bradley, the umpire?
Tell yes. me, give us your bold take.
I don't think that's cute at all. I think he's going to grow up to be a narc. I don't like this kid. Who grows up wanting to be an umpire, to be quite honest?
Well,
it's the worst type of job.
I will read a quote to you from Fox 2. Where is this originating from? All I have is Fox 2, but this quote tells it
Fox,
all.
Somewhere
one of these
in the
Fox
world.
Stations of Florida. Okay, so this is Bradley's dad was the one that is making the push. This is a quote given to Fox 2. One day, on a Thursday, my dad picked me up from school and said, hey, we're going to a game in Jupiter, and the only way we can do it is if you wear umpire gear. I was like, this is going to be embarrassing. Then I was like, all right, I'll do it. So this is a push from daddy to wear the umpire gear.
His
That's the only way he can
him?
Go.
That's... His father bribed him and said, you can't go to the game unless you dress up like a...
No, we can't go unless you do That's... this for yes. me. And he didn't want to do it?
Bradley, I take back what I said. Your dad sucks.
And we're supporting this?
Well, I don't know how many people, like, I didn't know until I just read this little quote here. I did not obviously hear that discussed
what
over the weekend.
What a bag of a dad.
Yeah, that's
yeah. His
great.
Dad. His dad needs to be set aside somewhere, put in the corner.
It's one
out.
Thing if the kid was like saying from an early age, like, this is really, what do those guys do? I want to know more. But like,
why does he get to wear the cool black uniform?
Yeah, that's a little different. It doesn't sound like that's the case.
Dad, I want to wear the Otani uniform.
I think you're... Can you do me a favor, Ray? Can you post that link on our Twitch chat? Because they're fired up about this.
Oh,
Twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score.
That is awful.
Northside 5. The kid said he wanted to be an umpire to Taylor McGregor. Did he? Or is that what his dad is telling him to say so he gets more attention?
He might... Maybe now he does, now that he's into it. But it
he
sounds
used
like the
him
begin-
to get into a spring training game in Jupiter. Because that's where the Cardinals spring training facility is.
It sounds like obviously he's very into it now, but it doesn't sound like the origin of this began with him wanting to do it.
No, I don't like any of it.
Why?
You shouldn't be using your children that way. If he wants to do something, that's should be his decision. But to manipulate like that, this is just the umpire costume.
I'm waiting for this kid to actually umpire because I used to umpire Little League and it was legitimately a terrible job. Well, if you messed up, all of these parents are yelling at you and I'm 13 years old.
Well, if 630's got a good point. That family is from Florida, right? Ray, according to what you just said, they flew to a series with two national TV games. Performative. BS.
I'm more worried about the kid if that's the case.
Do you think he's like a group chat like him and Marlins, man? It's like, hey, what game you going to? You want to link up?
You know, here's the thing about Marlins, man. Did I take some solace in seeing the Marlins man cut out at the Royals pandemic game? You know, when we started to have baseball games again in 2020? I was like, Marlins man in the crowd. Did I feel better? Yeah.
It's something.
Also, Marlins man is an adult. He's not trying to convince tiny Marlins man to do something. He's his own Marlins man.
Any Marlins man?
Tiny Marlins man. Yeah, that's funny.
Man, that is the worst. That's kind of a preview for our next segment. It is time for Five on It. More Bears takeaways, Cubs, and, oh, by the way, a pretty big Sox W as well. It's all next.